Good morning. This is Joel Hodson, creator of Mystery Science Theater 3000, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. See you in the future.
Rolling for February 28th, 2017. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow, and I'm wearing lots of beads.
Oh, is it Mardi Gras?
It's Mardi Gras. Fat Tuesday, baby.
All right.
I'm eating lots of fattening food. I'm going to throw some beads your way there, Steve. Here, I'm just going to throw some beads.
There we go. Let's celebrate. Let's eat anything we can find, because tomorrow we start our 40 days of Lent.
That's right. Build up to Easter, or as we call it, spring. Bring spring.
40 days till spring. I'm ready. Let's go. Let us do this thing. Excellent. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. And I actually got a chance to watch two movies this week, Chip.
You saw movies?
In the end of February, I actually sat down with my wife and watched Arrival, which I've been waiting for to see Arrival since it came out.
This has Amy Adams in it.
Amy Adams.
Oh, yes. I saw it the week it came out, and I remember what it was like. So tell me your experience. What did you think of this movie?
You know how much I love sci-fi. You know how much I love the idea of when the aliens come knocking on our door, what we're going to do. I really enjoyed this movie. I like how the aliens were not here to destroy us, and how the humans were not going to be super violent toward them either, although there were those in the story who chose violence.
Well, the backdrop of the story was Amy Adams' character basically had to try to communicate with something that we didn't have a language to communicate.
Right. She's the linguist. They walk into her office at the university and say, we need you because you already have top secret clearance. Come with us and talk to these aliens.
But that's not all, friends. It's almost like a Twilight Zone show.
Yeah, there is a great twist in this movie, and I don't know if we can spoil it. I think there's a lot of people who are going to see this on home video coming up in the next couple of weeks and months.
They probably missed it at the theater. Yeah. I remember seeing it. It was a packed house for me, but I saw it the opening day. But you saw it. I don't want to give it away, because I do think that if you're willing to go and sit down and go through a little science fiction ride, it's one of those things that you may have to watch again.
This is one of those intellectual sci-fi kind of pursuits. This is not Marvel superheroes. This is, you have to think about what's happening on the screen in order to understand it. I kind of equate this to the movie Contact, the Carl Sagan book turned into a movie. The wife and I really love Contact, and we kept comparing it here to Arrival, and we still like Contact better.
So you watched the movie with your wife, and yeah, then you had to watch one with your son. What did you end up watching?
We got a chance to see Max Steel. This was a movie last year. It used to be a cartoon turned into a live-action superhero alien, gets a magic suit, and the magic suit can do magic things, and he's got a little computer buddy that does all sorts of other things. The 10-year-old and I really dug this one. It's a Mattel movie. Okay. It's toy based.
But it's live action. It's a live action film.
This is a live action version of that story, and the adventure of being a teenager and being awkward and then getting this other power and being able to be this other person, that's pretty groovy to think about. I like this one. Max Steel. You got to see The Revenant. This is an Oscar winner.
This is Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh.
The Netflix fairy brought it to me in the mail, mm-hmm, as a Blu-ray.
Wow.
And it sat on my right in front of me, yeah, for about 3 weeks, I think it sat there, before I actually threw it in. My internet went down, and I couldn't work one morning, so I ended up watching that.
Yeah? And so?
And this was a pretty good movie. I absolutely enjoyed it. There are some rules. One, I would say, don't get attacked by bears.
Good.
That's probably the first thing I learned.
Ranger, sir. He had a picnic basket.
The second thing is, don't leave people who are not dead, because they may come back and hunt you down.
He's not quite dead.
He's not quite dead.
He's getting better.
He was just kind of left. And I guess we'll go with the third one. Don't treat Native Americans poorly. There's your third message there. Okay. This takes place in the 1820s. These are fur trappers. They basically go out and they're just basically working men who go out to the wilderness. They're killing elk, they're killing bear, they're killing, you know, things for their pelts.
Mm-hmm.
They're worth a lot of money, and so they package them up and they eventually sell them. Well, this is something went wrong with one of them. Mm. And then we have the bear attack, and then we have the story takes place. I enjoyed this. This is not for everyone. There is
gritty.
Yeah, it's the 1820s.
There's a lot of dirty people walking around.
A lot of people probably need baths.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of baths. I enjoyed it, and then eating raw meat. That goes on in there too.
Cause wow.
Some point you're digging for grubs because you're hungry.
Wow. Survival story.
I enjoyed it. This is not my favorite film. I would say, you know, they said it's an Oscar winner. I would say for me, probably 60s, 70s.
Okay.
Which doesn't sound very high, but that doesn't mean it wasn't a good story. This was a good story. It's just not my favorite.
All right. So opening this week, maybe some of these will be your favorites this week. We've got the new Logan movie is opening this week. I am really, truly excited about this.
Are you Hugh Jacked out for this?
I love Hugh Jackman as a performer on stage and screen. Hugh Jackman is the most well-rounded actor we have right now.
Well, he basically just said, thank you to all of my fans.
Uh-huh.
I played Wolverine for 17 years. Wow. 17 years. Interesting enough.
That's crazy.
And this is a rated R last film.
Mm-hmm. Based on the comic book Old Logan, where we see what happens to somebody who can't be killed, or at least heals really fast. How does he survive this long? And he's got a female sidekick here that might have powers of her own.
Well, there you go. Well, this looks like it's going to be the biggest film of the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Rated R, yeah. Which is because of Deadpool being so successful last February,
mm-hmm.
They pushed this to be rated R. Hugh Jackman pushed this to be rated R and even took a smaller salary to make this happen. So this is certainly not for everyone, but we'll see how it performs.
It is for me. I really would like to get to the theater to watch Logan this week. We'll see how it works out.
How about how about Groundhog Day 2?
Groundhog Day 2. It's called Before I Fall. It's not really Groundhog Day 2, but it is that same idea. This is a young lady who's having a day, and then she has that day again and day. Again and, it, and it, again.
And in fact, from the trailer, it's a car accident.
Oh, boy.
So she's trying to make the changes before this car accident happened.
Okay.
So it's a young person's movie. It's kind of brought out as a teen film.
Mm-hmm.
This could be interesting, but we'll see.
The reviews have not been stellar for this one. One of our friends of the show, Bears Fonte, did a review for this one at Sundance, and he questions whether or not this movie needs to exist, because Groundhog Day is a great film, but it's also aging, and it's for an aging population. A teenager might not pick up a Bill Murray amazing philosophical comedy. Maybe this one's the right movie for the day. The other one's called The Last Word. This is
Shirley MacLaine.
Shirley MacLaine is still making movies.
And Amanda Seyfried.
Yeah, and Joel Murray's in there too. So we've got a Murray brother somewhere.
So Shirley MacLaine plays an older, maturing lady,
mm-hmm.
who wants to write her obituary. She is a very controlling person.
Mm-hmm.
And so they send the young person who's going to write her obituary that she, of course, is going to control.
Yeah, this sounds like a good one. I do enjoy a good Shirley MacLaine. There are some really good Shirley MacLaine films. And then there's the other Shirley MacLaine films. This looks like a good one. I do think that I will see this one when it's on a streaming sort of a situation. The other one that's coming out this week is called Burlesque, Heart of the Glitter Tribe.
All right. Da-da, doom, doom, doom.
I love it when Chip dances for us.
This is a film about burlesque, mm-hmm. about the artists who perform burlesque and the dancers and all that fun stuff.
And we started having a little bit of a conversation about this. I don't know very much about burlesque. There's
Yeah, I don't either, Steve.
Well, you know more than I do.
Are you sure?
You tell me that this is something that is not new. This has just been around and pops up every once in a while.
Yeah, it's kind of when I say underground, there is a community of people who perform burlesque, just like there's a community of people like punk music and a community of people who like, you know, any other types of things you could think of. I immediately immediately think of Kitten on the Keys in San Francisco. She performs. You know, they're somewhat naughty and somewhat playful in how they present these songs that have two meanings. One, obviously, is very innocent, and the other one is very, very dirty.
It's just a bunch of people who love to perform. That's performance art, just with a group of people who just love to perform.
Well, and you can immediately think about that. Think of the people who were the drama school kids.
Mm-hmm.
Think of people who were dancers, and they want to perform. There's something a little bit that's risque about them, but this is not, I wouldn't say adult entertainment.
Right.
In the sense of like heading down to the local strip club. This is more of something that maybe a husband and wife would go to. Yeah, it's performance art.
Yeah.
It's like circus type stuff.
Yeah, I went and did a little bit of web searching and found a few different shows. And there's a lot of nerdy ones that people are performing.
Mean nerds like women?
Yes. they're performing all sorts of things. There's a Twin Peaks, a Mystery Science Theater, and an X-Files burlesque show out there that you can catch in 2017.
Imagine that.
I have been for a while now. So that one's called Burlesque, the Heart of the Glitter Tribe, and you can find that. That's probably another one of those that I'll wait for streaming. I don't think I could go to the theater and watch that one. Brings us to our book of the week, and you are continuing your pursuit of J.R.R. Tolkien's just huge tomes of adventures. You got through the Two Towers. This is the second part of the Lord of the Rings.
Exactly, or as some of us call it, the Empire Strikes Back of the Lord of the Rings. This is the second part.
Yeah, there's only one trilogy, and there's only one return, and it's not of the king, it's of the Jedi.
I got through the second one. I say I got through it. That should tell you something. I read my Hobbit book on how to read the Hobbit with the Tolkien professor.
Right.
I ended up reading the first part of the Lord of the Rings because I was like all jacked up. I was going to get through it. And I started the second one, and I got through this. But this was a little more challenging. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, at some point I got really, really deep in the woods here as we hiked along and we went on our adventure.
Even the trees walk in that movie.
Oh my goodness. I'm telling you right now, this was a little more challenging for me. Thank goodness I'm doing the whisper thing sync where you can listen to the book as you read the book. So on some times I'm reading the book, other times I'm listening, sometimes I'm doing both.
That's a great benefit. The Amazon Kindle, when you download a Kindle book and you can see it, and then you can get that whisper sync so that the audiobook can sync up with where you're reading. That is a great way to get through a book.
And in fact, it would have changed my college experience quite a bit. I'm going to kind of divert this conversation to that. If you are a young person and you're in school or you're in college and you need to get through lots and lots of reading, I cannot stress that WhisperSync may be the greatest thing you ever go through.
Mm-hmm.
There are times when you need to sit down with a book and you need to study.
Yep.
And there are times when you need to get through the material and you can speed it up. So you can, when I was driving someplace or I was working out, I could listen to it at 1.5. I found 2 was too fast because my goodness, between, you know, Steve of Aragon, son of such and such, there's no doubt Tolkien makes everything. First of all, there's lots of meals. And then there are lots of descriptions of lots of things. My goodness, I got through it. This was good. It sets up for the third part well. Thank goodness I ended up watching the films many years ago. Because what they did is they gave me the skeleton. If I ever felt I was not getting what I needed to get out of this, it allowed me to have the skeleton to be able to hang the meat as it was presented in the book to me. I enjoyed this. It was a lot more work than I thought it was going to be. I still have one more that I'll get through so I can officially say that I got through it. But I think the book is from a long time ago. We would not write this way today. I'm sorry, we probably wouldn't choose to. There's probably a group of people who really enjoy the richness of this.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt this is literature. It will be around for a millennia.
I think George R.R. Martin would argue with you that he is writing tomes of story, world building, and people are enjoying that still.
Well, there you go. And, you know, think about what Tolkien did. He created a genre of writing that we're going to discuss with our guests shortly, certainly has spread far beyond what he probably thought of. And, you know, there were all these stories that Tolkien was writing that would feed into this that he's just giving you a glance of right there.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm going to start the third part. I'm reading two other books in between because I think I need to step away from the world a bit. If you have not read these, I get why Christopher Lee read these every single year of his life. As a young person, there's just there's a lot to them. There's an expansive world there. I get a lot of what's going on with Samwise and Frodo, the adventure they're going through. But it's it can get heavy. And it can get, there's a lot of baggage to carry when you're reading a Tolkien book. So, listen, all I can say is pat me on the back. I got through part two.
Excellent work, Chip. Good job getting through part two. We look forward to hearing you explain how wonderful the experience was to get through part three. Brings us to our appetite, our app of the week, and we have a special guest this week. This is Professor Jonathan Chestnut from the Department of Performing and Fine Arts at Fayetteville State University. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning.
How are you? How is North Carolina?
Warm.
it was warm up here until today. We have snow on the ground.
Yeah, it snowed last night after the hailstorm that woke me up the night before. Thank you.
I had shorts earlier, so just so you know how it is down here.
Well, Chip's in shorts every day of the year, no matter what. There's a newspaper article somewhere with him snow blowing in short pants.
Yes, exactly. All right, so the reason we brought Professor Chestnut on is because he runs a podcast called Geek Talk at Fayetteville State University. And a week or so ago, he actually was talking about a game called Pathfinder.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the conversation was fascinating. I think our listeners would like to learn a little bit about this game.
All right. So, Jonathan, tell us all about Pathfinder. This is a role-playing game, right?
Right. Most people think of Dungeons and Dragons when they think of these types of games, where you create a character and you develop it. Pathfinder is a modern version of Dungeons and Dragons 3.5. When TSR sold the company to Wizards of the Coast was then bought out by Hasbro. Hasbro decided to take Dungeons and Dragons in a new direction, simplifying the game, making it more millennial friendly, I guess is the way to put it.
Okay.
He took a lot of the sort of overworked rules. And part of the mythology of it, of Pathfinder, is the people that were doing Pathfinder did a magazine called Dragon Magazine. And they had been approved by TSR to use, they had basically an open license to use anything that TSR created. So when they realized, when Hasbro came to them and said, okay, we're going to do our own magazine, we don't need y'all anymore, they were like, okay, well, what are we going to do now? And then they realized that so many people were still playing Dungeons & Dragons 3.5 because they didn't like the new rules.
Okay.
So they realized they still had access to this license that allowed them to write anything for 3.5. So they took Dungeons & Dragons 3.5, which was the most popular version of it, and they developed Pathfinder, because they couldn't use the Dungeons and Dragons name, but it's basically the 3.5 Dungeons and Dragons. They fixed a lot of the holes in the rules and cleaned it up, and then they put it out, and the old Dungeons and Dragons players just made our way to it, and it's been really revolutionary. And you know, it's a great story arc, and it involves, you know, getting out and playing with other people.
Well, in fact, let's get down to the basics of this. Let's start off by asking, what is a role-playing game, an RPG?
A role-playing game is a game. Most people think board games, they open the board, they have their pieces, they move it around there, somebody wins. A role-playing game is a game where you have a set of rules that allow the establishment of each person creating their own character. It allows for individual creativity. That allows people to, you know, pick the race and the class. Classes being like fighter, magic user, wizard. Yeah, they get to write their own story. And so rather than playing a game where everybody is playing against each other, like Monopoly or something like that. You put a group of people around a table, they create their own characters, and then you have a game master or someone that facilitates the game that sets the environment and tells them, you know, you're walking through this dungeon and people, and it's like, all right, well, how wide is it? How tall is it? What do we smell? What do we hear? And basically, it's like being in the adventure book. If you're one of those people that screams at the screen, pick up the gun, don't go in there, you're ready for role playing because that's the, you get to control the characters. So it's a, it's more of a social kind of thing. You get to play with people that you interact with for years. You create long-term friendships. I've got friends, we reminisce about it, and we talk about things that never really happened, like the time that Thomas fell on me, and they think it's still very funny. And I'm like, but it didn't really happen. But we were all there, and we all shared that moment. And so gaming is much more social and in an age where everything is in front of a screen.
Wonderful.
And in the old days, Dungeons & Dragons, you had to be in the same place with each other to play a game. With Pathfinder, you don't need to. Is that right?
Well, there's different ways to play nowadays. We still play together. For the most part, there's Pathfinder Society. Society is a new idea that Pathfinder, that Paizo, the company, the parent company that put it out, came up with. And basically, it's like rules for everybody. And they have a website so I can register my character. And when I go to play a module, the Pathfinder Society modules are designed to only last 4 hours.
Okay.
Typical play with a table of 4 to 6. And at the end of it, whereas, like Chip and I were talking earlier, that we used to play every night, but he didn't get to play a lot with us because he only came over every few weeks. What happened is, and why he was always sort of at a loss, was our characters would keep leveling, and so when he would come back, he would be behind us. Society, when we put together a module, we put together these events, and there's societies in Pathfinder Society clubs in every game shop in America now. And you can sign up for them, and they have ranges of levels of the adventure. So if I've got a character that's level 1 or level 2, I can sign up for the 1 to 4 module. I go, I play, and at the end, I get what's called a chronicle sheet. And the chronicle sheet tells me how much experience I got, how much gold I got, and what I can buy from that mission using the gold that I acquired. I keep all my chronicle sheets, and let's say I go to visit y'all up there. Mm-hmm. I say y'all, I'm in the South.
We figured that out.
But if I go up there and let's say I want to play, I'm there for the week or something, and I want to play, I can bring my characters. And the old days of playing Dungeons & Dragons, it's hard to find a group. It's hard to find a group that you can play with if you're only there for a little bit of time. But like if I wanted to, I could sign up for a table there. I bring an appropriate level character. If the game master asks, I have to be able to produce my chronicle sheets to show the experience and the stuff that I've earned. That way the characters are all evenly powered. You don't have people showing up with that level 30 ninja, half elf, whatever.
I hate that happens.
That was always a problem in the old days. You know, you bring somebody in, they were like, well, I have a fourth level fighter with a vorpal sword. It's like, fourth level fighters shouldn't have that kind of weapon. That's a level 20 weapon. But this way, all the characters are kind of parallel. Nobody gets ahead of each other. Mm-hmm. And it allows people like myself, like my wife started teaching public school this year. And so I didn't get to go to the Thursday night games as much. But when I go, there's always a spot for me.
Okay.
Because there's a table with appropriate level for my character. So I'm never excluded. Whereas if in regular what we call homebrew games.
Sure.
Which is where you play as a group and it's always the same group. And if somebody's not there, you have to kind of omit them and everything else.
So does you said a game lasts maybe 4 to 5 hours. Am I correct?
A society game lasts 4 to 5 hours. A homebrew game, you can play all day or you can play for a couple hours. I play with my two sons, my 12-year-old and my 10-year-old, and they have the attention span of a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old. So we play for about 2 to 3 hours at home, but we do a homebrew game. I set the level of the game differently than I would with adults. Adults, okay. We do these modules that you know, where you're saving the world and everything else. My two sons play in this, the town that they live in is a halfling town.
Okay.
Everybody there is halflings. And they do things instead of fate taking over the world or saving the world. They're not like the, you know, they're not running around throwing the ring in Mordor or whatever.
Sure.
They're, I think the last thing they did, they're like level three or level four, and there was goblins stealing chickens at one of the farms. And so there was this whole thing of them saving the chickens. And
so it could be appropriate for, you know, a younger person who may have different ways of, you know, not be prepared to save the world yet.
Oh, well, yeah. And when we started playing a couple years ago, my youngest son, because I do a lot of voices and a lot of sounds, and I'm very animated when I do these kinds of things.
Awesome.
That right there is, I think you hit part of it. The game master is the storyteller.
Right.
And can be as fun and playful as you wish him to be.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm one of those, I don't get stuck on rules that much. There are game masters that are very much on the rule book. If it says this, then it's this. But, you know, I try to be flexible when I'm playing with children because, mm-hmm. you know, they're going to try things. They have ideas that don't necessarily fit my original idea, and I just have to let them run with it. My 10-year-old was scared of zombies. He's scared of the undead.
Okay. And so, but most of us are.
I'm okay with the undead. It's fine with me. I grew up with Dracula and mummies, and it's fine.
I don't like ghosts because you can't do anything to ghosts. Yeah. The ring girl, I can't do nothing with her. Zombie, I'm good. But he's scared of the undead, he was. Now he's not. But when we started playing and I had them run into some skeletons, at the end of the game, he came to me. He said, I didn't like the skeletons. They scared me too much.
Okay.
And so I just took out undead from the game altogether until he was comfortable with it. So I was able to change the narrative. Yeah, exactly.
And from my listening to your podcast, I got that there are a bunch of different worlds. I mean, if you wanted to be in a superhero world, or if you wanted to be in a world that was all Frankensteins and vampires, you could choose a different types of modules to go through.
Or just stay in my basement for a weekend.
Well, actually, Pathfinder is a classic fantasy game. It's the wizards, dragons, and all of that.
Okay.
There's other games like Mutants and Masterminds, which is put out by Green Ronin, I think.
Okay.
That's a superhero game. There's just so many. But any genre has a game. I mean, there's a Star Trek role-playing game if you wanted to play.
There's a Doctor Who one as well.
There's a Doctor Who. There's a Star Wars one, which is real popular right now.
Star Wars, Chip. Star Wars.
Steve likes Star Wars.
I like Star Wars.
Earlier, he said something about us being able to play on the computer. There's a software now that is basically desktop role-playing
on
the computer. It's a lot like using Skype, but you can upload the maps and the tokens, and you can mark players, and people actually move on the screen, but it's all live podcast kind of thing. It's like
we
interact with each other, and it allows people over long distances and old gaming groups, like you and I, if we wanted a gaming group, it could be something that's done on the computer at a set time, and we all just get on, we log into the game together, and we run a module.
Yeah, those of you who watch Total Party Kill on the Incomparable Network, that's exactly what he's describing here, is they are playing Dungeons & Dragons over a Skype kind of interaction and getting to record that as a podcast.
Wonderful.
It really allows people to stay connected to their old friends.
Have you seen Netflix? Have you seen Stranger Things?
Absolutely.
So what do you think about the kids are playing Dungeons & Dragons?
It's kind of the centerpiece of that story.
Well, when I saw it, I loved it because the books they had are the right books. They had Dungeons & Dragons second edition books, mm-hmm. which are appropriate for the 1980s. And it had art by Jeff Dees in the books. And it's just so 1980s. It's such about imagination. So when I saw those guys and then they were able to grasp new concepts and things that were completely alien to them because they had experienced it in this sort of fantasy direction. They had sort of opened their minds up to this kind of thing. And that's where we see our kids today when we're like, oh, well, they're playing video games. But the video games are opening their minds up to doing these other things. And so we're seeing these leaps in social technology that these kids are bringing in. And it's because of gaming. And it's just, I mean, it's a natural pendulum. We were role playing tabletop, and then they see monsters, and they equate it to something that they understand, and they deal with it. They rise to it because they've already kind of processed it.
Fantastic. That is what we try to teach in schools, is all about logic and problem solving, and playing these role playing games can certainly bring kids to that level of thinking. That's fantastic.
That is incredible insight. Okay. Well, if a person was interested in role playing games, where would you point them to immediately, I guess, go for more information?
Any hobby store in your town is going to have a gaming section. Barnes and Nobles has a gaming section. Books a Million, they all have gaming sections. And usually a lot of those places are the home base of Pathfinder Society.
Okay.
And Society is a good way to start playing. A couple of my friends started playing Society and they didn't like the formality of it. They didn't like the tightness of it.
Okay.
They didn't feel like they had the creative freedom that they have in homebrews, and which is true because of keeping the game balanced. But what a lot of them have done is they play Society a few times. They met other players in their community, and they started homebrew games. So it's a way to kind of meet people that are interested in the same thing.
We want to thank Professor Chestnut for coming in today and giving us this wonderful insight into Pathfinders. If you'd like to find out more information of it, we'll have some links in our notes. To do so. And also you can find out more information about Professor Chestnut's podcast and also a little bit about the program down at Fayetteville State University.
Anybody can email me any questions at jchestnut@uncfsu.edu. I welcome any kind of nerd questions anybody wants to throw.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us. Brings us to our Now the News segment, and things are happening in the world, Chip, and boy, we are advancing in our society in so many ways. One of the ways, we might be moving to a world without apps.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because think about what your phone means to you and the apps on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did. I mean, the iPhone just did a refresh of these apps, and many apps had not been updated for a long time,
mm-hmm.
may not be working properly with them.
And remember in 2007 when Steve Jobs showed us the iPhone, he said that an app store was not necessary, that everything we were going to do was just going to be a web page. And boy, did he change his mind on that pretty quick.
Isn't this interesting? Because, all right, so the question you have before us, or that you're posing, are we at a time where apps are going to start going away?
And what's going to replace them? That's the real question. And what we see is Gartner Research has put out some numbers of some surveys of usage of phones and technology in 2016. And we see that about 83% of those respondents said that they use social media apps. That is down 2% from the previous year.
That could be 2% from the previous year. I bet politics has a lot to do with it because it was very heavy during the political season, and that may have turned off part of our population.
Okay.
We still use, between Twitter and Facebook and your love of Snapchat, of course.
Well, the teenagers are definitely into Snapchat. Us old people don't know anything about Snapchat. We have a Snapchat account.
Of course. We use it all the time.
No, we don't.
Okay. We don't use it all the time. But there's a possibility of using it all
right.
the time.
So to the messaging apps, 71% of respondents said that they use messaging apps. That is up 3% from the previous year. So yes, going to those Snapchats instead of the social apps like Facebook and Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Video is down 2% in the app world. Map usage is down 3%.
That's interesting.
It is.
Because between Waze and Google Maps and Apple's version of Maps, I mean, those get used all the time. If I don't know where I'm going, I plug in the address and it just tells me where to go.
That one did strike me as interesting because I do think that most people are using the maps.
Except for the men. They never ask for directions.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe there's just 3% more men this year. 60% of respondents say they use shopping apps. That's up 4%.
Shopping.
35% say that they are using their virtual personal assistants. This is where the Gartner research seems to point to a change in the way we are using our phones.
Well, think about it. You have the Google Orc, the egg.
Yeah, the Google Home.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
And so you say, okay, Google.
Mm-hmm.
And Google says, what can I do for you, Steve?
I have appeared like a genie out of a bottle. How can I help you?
I say, Alexa, you know, mm-hmm. with mine, and say, Alexa, put something on my list,
mm-hmm.
or play music, or whatever it is. And then I yell at Siri, because I say, Siri, no, Siri, no, I need this.
No, seriously. I really just want you to do this for me.
Siri, please.
Please.
Listen to my voice, Siri. But Siri, we have to be kind to Siri. Siri's been off playing in the Batcave with Batman, Lego Batman.
Right. Film. That was funny.
But anyway.
It worked fine for Batman.
Obviously, these are all going to improve dramatically over the coming years.
And 35% of respondents say that they're using it, but that's up 5% from the previous year. So that is a big growth area. I think that's where we're going to see all of the apps that we are currently using getting into being a part of those virtual personal assistants, being a chatbot inside of that one single app.
I can immediately think of, when I say hidden web pages, having the virtual assistant be able to grab information that's maybe not out there or maybe more challenging to get to.
I just think of Google Now. My Google Now is kind of a news feed for me. It thinks of, and I'm using that in air quotes, it finds these things for me that I didn't know I wanted to know until they came up on my Google Now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the last thing that I see there, 6 to 10 apps a month are what the average person is using.
Isn't that interesting? We've been doing this app of the week for 135 weeks, and the average person has 6 to 10 apps that they use.
And I would not disagree. Mm-hmm. I think that many of them, you know, particularly when dealing games or something like that, they come in and out of vogue. But eventually you settle on the map that you're going to use. Mm-hmm. You settle on the virtual assistant you're going to use, the text app you're going to use.
Right.
And then you determine whether you're going to use something like, you know, for an iPhone, whether you're going to use Pages or Microsoft Word,
mm-hmm.
or Google Docs.
Right. Yeah.
So you settle into your comfort zone.
So 6 to 10 is the number.
You know, the deal would be, if you're an app, do you replace one of those, or do you have a service that's useful for there? And I could see a lot of temporary services. I go to the museum has an app. I download that app that gives me the directions on how I'm going to use the museum. After I leave, I either keep the app on my phone or I delete the app.
Right.
So you can see temporary apps coming in and out. Or things that you pop in once you're parking or something like that.
And those are the things that we're going to see rolled into those virtual personal assistants more and more, I think.
Okay.
Because I don't want to download that app to figure out where to park in Schaumburg.
Okay.
I don't need that. I need the...
Facebook could give that to me. Or you
Cortana
know,
or Siri or whomever has that data to know that I'm driving in Schaumburg and I'm looking for a parking space and to have that algorithm that says, you need this information.
Do you think that we're going to have something like WhatsApp, which is very popular in Europe?
Very popular. I've used a lot of these. We've mm-hmm. talked about a few of them over the years, and they're still trying to find their way. What we see in the United States is there's almost all of us have unlimited texting, so there's no reason to replace texting with another messaging app.
Sure. The difference being is I have a professional Google Voice number,
mm-hmm.
and I get texts on that quite a bit, and I can archive them and all sorts of things like that. So maybe there is that ability or the reason why I would want that.
There's so many of them, though. The
sure.
pool is full of messaging apps. We could go through a list of 20 of them right now. WhatsApp is very popular outside of the United States. WeChat is very popular in China.
And then we have Facebook Messenger, mm-hmm. which we reluctantly use when we have to.
Well, and when our wives make us use it. I think that's where I use it the most, is when my wife starts a conversation with a whole group of people that are our friends.
And if you think of Facebook being almost like a Yellow Pages,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it really, really is kind of a Yellow Pages. And, you know, our community has, you know, a de facto newspaper because we don't have a newspaper in our community anymore where people post whether they're
feed
going to have
information.
In fact, what I learned from this week is we have a corned beef dinner in our area.
Oh.
And I learned that, you know, that's going to be, it's coming up and that you're going to have, you know, Mardi Gras is today. There's a pancake event happening at one of the local churches.
There you go.
And, you know, our show comes out. And all the other, you know, the car shows and all those other types of things, the expos that come to your area, we don't have a newspaper to get those out anymore. We basically have a local group for our village that helps us get that information.
That works really well. That's very good insight. That's awesome. The question is, what is the future? And nobody really knows.
Well, I know the future may not be on Earth, Steve.
Oh, boy. We have the possibility of going to another planet. NASA gave us the big news this week that they found 7 different planets around one star that are all Earth size, Earth temperature. We could go live on one of these other planets.
You mean there could be a red planet and a blue planet, Steve?
Yes. Yes.
There could be harmony in the universe.
Or we could start warring with our neighboring planet. Yes. Yes. All of the science fiction stories that we've all heard about where there's more than one planet around one star, they found the area code to get there. And it's less than 40 light years away.
Less than. So what does that really mean, Steve? Well, in a lifetime, could you make it there?
No. So what that means is if we got onto a rocket, we would have to bring multiple families.
3 generations.
Because 3 generations later, that's the people that would make it there. We would call it Lost in Space.
Or Battlestar Galactica.
Or Battlestar Galactica.
But anyway, thank goodness for NASA for finding us the new worlds that we will eventually inhabit.
Yeah, otherwise we would have to live on a satellite.
Or a spaceship.
A spaceship?
A starship.
A spaceship?
On a 5-year mission.
In space?
Yes.
Where mad scientists could send us up to a satellite?
And force you to watch movies.
And force us to watch cheesy movies? The worst they can find?
Don't think too hard about it, Steve. Don't think too hard about it.
Those of you who don't know, haven't talked to me this week, all I've been talking about, all I've been doing is pursuing Mystery Science Theater 3000, the new season.
That was a television show a long time ago.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Explaining to the normals what Steve is talking about. Yes, Chip. Mystery Science Theater is a TV show that has not been airing new episodes for the last 17 years, but the new season is coming, and we got a release date this week, April 14th, 2017, Good Friday. Bad movies. I'm so excited. This is all I've been talking about. This is all I've been doing. I am thrilled that this exists.
You went to the event.
I went to the red carpet premiere, and I have seen the first movie, and I can't speak about it. It's awesome.
Well, there you go. So it seems like we've got a lot going on.
I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back the next week.
I think we can. I think we'll be hungrier next week because Lent is going to start tomorrow, and we're going to make it. I think we're going to make it.
All right.
We want to thank our guest this week, Professor Jonathan Chestnut, who came in and gave us so much information. It's great to talk to professors and smart people, isn't it?
Oh, it's awesome.
If you need more information, there's so many ways to find it. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You can find us on Stitcher, iTunes, and TuneIn Radio, and every day of the week. You can go to our news site, news.toomuchscrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We'll see you in the future.